This is the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Hey everybody, Jason again. Welcome to part two of my conversation series with Dr. Bonnie Guy from Appalachian State. If you didn't catch it, make sure to check out part one where we talked about authenticity. Now we're back to talk about persuasion, which is the sales process. It's where the magic and the fun happens of selling once you have that fundamental of who you are and why you're selling and what you're actually offering. A little background in case you missed part one. If you did, once you're done listening or watching this, make sure to go check it out. But Dr. Bonnie, so she is a part of the John W. Guffey Jr. Program, professor of marketing, and also the director of the professional selling program at Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina. Her mission, which of course resonates with me and I love it, and obviously that's why she's here. Her mission is to teach that sales is a helping profession and that salespeople are professional value creators, which if you caught part one, we talked about that. She mentioned it even at the end, talking about, you know, salespeople who really actually want to build value versus the ones who are just trying to get in the middle of a transaction, make some money, and then move on. So here we are, talk about persuasion part two. Dr. Bonnie, are you ready for this part of the conversation?
Sure thing, Jason.
All right. So let's jump into this. This part here on the persuasion is the intentional process and act of moving the right people forward towards, you know, a better result, right? Like helping them by in some way. Now, obviously, if it's not the right fit, then you send them on your way. But we're talking about helping that person move forward. You mentioned some stuff in the first part about the sales process and what people want and the transactional thing. What have you found from a sales selling process that either you've done in the past or what, you know, what you prefer as a, let's say, a selling model or a sales process?
Well, it's interesting, just to back up a second, you know, something that you just said is really very closely aligns with the definition of sales I give to my students, which really, I get some puzzled looks. It makes sense to them later on, but I just say selling is the process of guiding someone to allocate resources in such a way that they end up better off as a result. And so, you know, a lot of students go, what? Like, you know, it's all about them. Yes. Yes, it is. It's all about them. And so we also speak about sales in broader terms. So I say there are a lot of non-sales salespeople. So coaches, you know, managers, think about therapists, teachers, spiritual directors, whatever. But I said, you know, they're all working in such a way as to guide somebody to make a good decision about allocating resources, whether it's time, energy, money, whatever that is, in such a way that they end up better off as a result. So, you know, in terms of sales processes, then I'm sure they're more than just this category, but I talked with students about how, well, there's a sales process, or at least the presentation part, that's just a canned, memorized pitch, right? And most of those, a lot of times you hear those in telemarketing calls, right? So you pick up the phone and you hear something and you go, either you don't even know this pitch because I can hear you reading it, or you're so bored with it, I have to be the 57th person you gave it to today. And so, you know, that I tell them the reasons that some organizations use that, and there are some positives to it, but also there's a lot of negatives. I mean, it's not very adaptive. It's not really very customer oriented. there are sales processes where a huge, well-researched, lengthy written proposal is the basic salesperson. It has a little person alongside it to, or a team to guide it along. And that's usually big bid projects or things like that. But I say, you know, 80% of selling, especially at the presentation stage, is we call organized sales dialogue. So you have a roadmap, but you don't really know going in exactly how that conversation or that interaction is going to happen. Like, you know that there's maybe stages to it. But it's all about, especially at the beginning, it's about asking lots of questions and doing a lot of non-judgmental listening, listening at a level that allows you to probe more deeply with really relevant follow-up questions. And then based on that, and you know, again, we call that needs discovery. So it's finding out what is it that's important to the prospect and customer. What problems are they trying to solve? What opportunities are they trying to take advantage of? What realities are they trying to change? You know, what goals are they pursuing? Once we've done that, then we can decide whether or not we even have a shot at providing something for them. So as you said before, you know, sometimes, and students get surprised at this too. What do you mean? Like, somebody might be willing to buy from you, but you tell them not to? Well, I don't tell them not to buy from me, but I tell them that, you know, the ideal solution for them might not be one that I can provide, and then they can make a decision from there. And sometimes, you know, in the short term, you lose a sale by even maybe redirecting them to a competitor. You know, I can't give you really, like, I could help a little, but I can't give you that ideal solution you're looking for. Here's a place that you might be able to find that. And so they're pretty astonished that you would do this, right? Because, but you have metrics to meet, you know, what about your quota and things like that? And I just say, nobody built a successful sales career on a string of one-time sales. And, you know, you can go ahead and convince the person that you can provide them something to help them, but eventually they're going to find out whether you can or you can't, or if there was something better that they could have done. And based on that, they're going to make a decision not only whether to buy from you again, but whether to even give you their time. Right. So if you can't get any of their time again, you have no chance of doing business with them. And if it's really bad, they're going to tell a whole lot of people about their experiences and how those people shouldn't spend their time with you either. So even though it's the right thing to do, it's also the most successful thing to do, because people aren't stupid, you know, and they know if they've been had or if you were just looking out for yourself. Mostly, and they're not going to subject themselves to that again because they have too many other options. So that's a really long answer to a single question, and I hope that was what you had in mind.
More than I had even guessed and imagined, and answered some other things, and then let me do. But there's one thing you said towards the end that is amazing. No one built a successful career on a string of one-time sales, I think is what you said. Yeah. And it's so true, because I think there's a lot of times where people see salespeople, think of what salespeople do or have to do to be successful. Or what I've even met is some people who are in sales and they think they're really successful in sales because they're able to, as they say, sell ice to Eskimos, which I think is the worst thing you could ever say or think that is effective. But again, are they really successful and do they have a successful career? And I think here's the big thing, and this is what people don't realize, is the part that you said where, like, people aren't going to tolerate it and people share those bad experiences. When you started in sales, and even not too long ago, that type of salesperson just selling anything to anybody because they didn't care, their reputation couldn't get exposed unless they did a lot of bad things or hurt a lot of people. And then they could change states, they could change industries, they could change company names. Yeah. Like, they could run from it a little bit. Now with the internet, like, it will find you, it will follow you. And I think that's one of the things that excites me the most, is because of the internet and reputation management and stuff that's out there, it's getting harder and harder to be a self-centered bad salesperson, right?
Well, you know, and the thing, I told you in the last segment that I do probably as much preaching as I do teaching. But, you know, what I tell students is, I could stand up here all day long and tell you you should do things this way because it's the right and ethical and moral way to do it. And it is. But the good news is, it's also the way that's going to help you the most. So, you know, take that sell ice to Eskimos. that's a really bad, that's a salesperson who has no clue about how to prospect, right? Because how long, how much longer and how many more people, Eskimos, are you going to have to talk to sell ice than if you just went someplace that is really freaking hot and they need ice, right? So I say, you know, the presentation, students think sales is all about the presentation. And certainly that's a really big part of selling. But there's a process prior to the presentation and a process beyond the presentation. All of that is sales. And every step of the way, I said, every one of those steps influences your close rate or your outcomes, right? So you could go put your claws into anybody who's got a pulse and is breathing and try to pitch them on your product or service. But you're going to run through, you're going to have to talk to a lot of people unless you find the people that it's really a fit for. You know, you're going to have 8 meetings with them to get them to say yes instead of 2. Or, you know, you're going to have to go through 20 leads to get a sale instead of 5 leads to get a sale. So not only will you not be bothering people and trying to convince them to do something they really don't need or want to do, why don't you just start out by trying to find the people you could actually help? And the more of those you find, the higher your close rate is going to be and the shorter your sales cycle is going to be. So is it more moral and ethical and right? Of course it is. But also from the standpoint of the salesperson, you know, when you're not wasting other people's time, you're not wasting your own either.
Yeah. You said that students think that the presentation is the main part or the most important part or maybe the only part of sales, right? Where do you think that comes from, that belief of what selling is?
Because that's the most public visible part. It's like the, you know, the iceberg, and you see the tip of it and you don't see what's underneath. There is a lot of pre-presentation activity. There's a lot of behind the scenes activity that goes into effective selling and providing value. It's not glamorous. It doesn't rely on the sheer force of your charisma or personality. I just think, you know, and a lot of students have limited experience being on the other side of a sale. You know, they go to retail stores or they go, you know, telemarketing or set cable up in their apartment. You know, their parents have been both professionally or personally more interactive with salespeople than students have. But that's what they see, or it's also what they see in movies, you know, Glengarry, Glenn Ross, or, you know, any of the movies that have, whether they're making fun of it or it's serious, you know, about sales. And it's all about, I don't know if you were of the era that watched WKRP in Cincinnati, Cincinnati, and Herb Tarlick, right, with his plaid jacket and his loud demeanor and his white patent leather shoes. And it was all about the pitch. So, you know, I think that students come in thinking you have to know exactly the right things to say and you have to be good at saying them. And that's where the prospect says yes or no. So that's what sales is. And don't get me wrong, it is a big part of the process, but there's so much more before and after that that most people aren't aware of or don't see that. That's why they think that's what sales is.
Well, and I love what you said with that part and combining what you mentioned before, which is that if you only focus on the presentation, you're going to have to do a lot of presentations to a lot of people. And you're basically playing the numbers game, which a lot of salespeople and organizations still do, which is they're just trying to pitch the world and hoping that it resonates with enough people to, you know, make money at it, right? Like think of door to door, where it's just like, let me knock on doors and talk to people and just pitch them and hope that they're interested, you know, that mode. And again, I can see where students coming in would see that or think that because of limited exposure or, you know, watching a movie like Boiler Room or a show like Mad Men, and you're just like, oh yeah, it's just about pitching. And then you close the deals if you say the right thing. And of course, that's not what you're teaching and that's not what the world sees as professional sales. Where do you see, so we're talking about the sales process and persuasion, where do you see the challenges or why do people not buy right? From the buyer side, from the consumer.
Countless reasons people don't buy. Your product's not a very great product, or it's fine, but there's another product that's better, or they can't afford it, or, you know. But I think the question maybe you're trying to get at is like, why don't they engage with you? Right. Because again, if you can't get them engaged with you, never mind, you won't even get a chance for them to say yes or no, you know, to a proposal. So why don't people engage with salespeople? They don't think they bring value to the process. Maybe they're satisfied, or they think, you know, they're as satisfied as they could be with whatever it is they're doing, and they don't want to do something different. You know, there's a gazillion reasons, but why do they not engage? A lot of that goes back to the trust and the feeling that, will I get more out? What's the ROI for me giving you a chance and the time I'm going to spend with you to see if you have anything that's valuable to me, and the time it's going to take and the risk involved in me trusting that you're somebody that I'm safe with, or, you know, is going to help me. So, you know, there's a million reasons anybody doesn't buy something, but from a salesperson standpoint, you should be most concerned about whether they're willing to engage with you, because they're not going to buy with you if they don't engage at all.
Yeah. And I think you touch on some key things that I agree with and have seen, which is they've got to feel safe. They've got to feel like they can trust you even from the moment, right? That's why I say the sales experience starts from marketing, outreach, all of that into, you know, the whole sales process, because that person is deciding, but they've got to feel safe. They've got to trust you. They've got to feel like it's worth it. Is the time and energy exchange worth what might potentially help them get to a better place, which, you know, in the first part was what you were talking about with the goal of sales and, you know, even with the program. So with the students, then when you're teaching them this, how do you go about getting them to either see the process or follow a process that involves those things that they weren't even thinking about, like safety, value, and trust is probably not what they're thinking, but then how do you help them understand that process, or how do you teach them that so that they can go out in the world and do that?
I think it's not too much of a hard sell to tell them. They understand it and they like it. You know, because it goes back to that fear they had before that they would have to be some kind of person professionally, mm-hmm. that they wouldn't be normally, or they'd have to do things that felt a little icky or something. So, you know, they're all on board with the idea that, oh yeah, I'm helping people, and, you know, they're going to be better off for interacting with me. Now, understand. Buying into it is first, understanding it. Conceptually, it's not even that difficult. You know, we can explain, I explain it, they get it. And sometimes in classes, you know, I either see the nonverbals, or I actually have people sometimes say to me, like, why are we even talking about this stuff? It's just common sense. Like, why are we in a class about this? And I'll say, well, two reasons. One is common sense isn't apparently as common as it used to be. But secondly, it's one thing to know something, and it's another thing to be able to execute it properly and consistently. So let's take listening as a skill, because that's really important and needs discovery and just in human relationships. And I even tell them, you know, I've been teaching listening skills for, you know, some of you weren't even born. I was teaching listening skills. Does that mean I'm a perfect, wonderful, great shining example of a good listener? Sometimes, you know, and sometimes I'm awful, because it's not knowing what to do. It's actually doing it and doing it well and doing it consistently. So I think some of the hardest things for them to do, even though they understand it, they buy into the process and they buy into this idea that we're going to put the customer first. We're going to try to understand first. And then based on what we hear, we're going to position what we can do and how we can help with that, or even how they can make a good decision. But then when we get into doing some role plays and things like that, I mean, needs discovery. Like, so they've got a product or service that they're, quote, selling, and they ask a question of the prospect. So just hypothetically, say it was like, you know, cloud-based payroll processing services or something like that. And the customer, they start asking questions, and the customer says, you know, they're a small business owner, and they say, you know, oh my gosh, I spend every other week, I'm spending 15 hours a week on payroll. I can't stand it. It just takes so long. I don't know what the heck I'm doing. And they get so excited because they know their solution can help them, and boom, they're out of needs discovery, and they're taking off in presentation. And this whole idea that, you know, no, the very first thing is we just want to really find out what's going on and what people need and why it's important and ask those deeper questions just goes right out the window because they get so excited that, oh, I can tell them I can do this and I can tell them about that. And, you know, so it's not getting them to buy in, and it's not getting them to conceptually understand the process. It's getting them to execute it well and execute it consistently, because it's not easy. Even when you believe it, it's not easy. There's all sorts of reasons you get pulled or distracted or, you know, waylaid from that process.
Well, and it's fun to hear what you're talking about, because my mind is instantly thinking of sports, like, you know, baseball, which is complex. It's easy, but it's also complex, where I'm thinking like, okay, so if there's a runner on this base and the batter hits the ball to this person, here's what you do versus this person. And there's all these theories and all these things that you should do if you know baseball in particular. And then there's what actually happens when the ball gets hit, and does everyone actually know what to do, and how much repetition and practice and muscle memory and instinct does it take to actually get it right in the moment of the heat of the moment, right? Which is what you're talking about with sales, which is, oh, of course I know what to do. Oh, of course I would do that. It's like, oh, really? Okay. Well, let's try it. Let's see what happens. Like, go do it. And then all of it goes out the window, you know, and then the coaching. And that's what I love about programs like yours, is that environment where students, somebody is learning that about sales, instead of really what usually happens in companies is on the job training in front of a prospect that they screw up that deal. And then they screw up the next one, or they get in a bad habit, like, you know, an athlete with a bad habit of what they do that's not effective. And then they just never get it right. And that's what you're providing, is this environment where you're helping them realize, like, it's good to know the theory, but here's what actually happens. And then here's what we do to build that habit to follow the process that we know works. Right.
Right. And again, to some extent, making it your own, but mm-hmm. You have to start with a model, and then you have to get good enough at it to know when and where it's okay to tweak it. Too many students want to tweak really early because they just think, well, yeah, I get what you're saying, but Larry, like the really fast baseball player is on third, and he's just so tempted to steal home, you know, because he's going to get a run, and all his coaching says, this is not the time to do that, but I know better because I'm a little faster, or I'm a little smarter. I can, you know, circumvent the coaching, and I can do it my way. And then occasionally that turns out okay, but mostly it doesn't.
I love it. It's such an amazing, you know, analogy to add to it. And you're right. I mean, it's all about starting with the model, getting it down, and then making it your own with some tweaks, but still keeping the same fundamentals. So again, great place to end this part of the conversation on persuasion and sales processes. For people tuning in, again, they can find you on LinkedIn if they search Bonnie Guy. The links will be in the show notes, both for your LinkedIn as well as Appalachian State's program specifically for professional selling. But if people are tuning in, watching, or listening to this, and you're not looking at the show notes, just Google Appalachian State and the professional selling program, and they will find the page, find more information, whether you want to get involved as a corporate sponsor or potentially join the program as a student or be involved in some way, definitely check it out. I mean, I can't say enough, even without being there or seeing the program in action, just the stuff that you're saying resonates so much, and, you know, obviously love supporting that. So thank you for being on here, this part two Dr. Bonnie, and sharing so much about what you see for sales and what you're helping the future of sales do.
Yeah, thank you.
And on that note, I'm excited because the next segment is going to be about the future of sales, which we're going to talk about. For everyone tuning in, make sure you checked out part one. You stay tuned for part three when we talk about that. And just see all of this as a way to shift the way sales is done, shift it from that dirty word to something that people trust, they feel safe with, they find value from. All the things that Dr. Bonnie has been saying is so important in the world of sales. It's missing in so many aspects where it's not necessarily full of arm twisters anymore. It's just full of people who are just not quite understanding what they could focus on and what people really want. Until next time, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.